Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DC Universe. I'm Alex Gunn.
I'm Justin Gunn.
I'm Pete.
And we are finally, after so long, we started this podcast, I want to say March 3rd, 2023,
under the idea that we were very specific.
Well, I just randomly, just kind of pulling that out of nowhere.
It seems like maybe you looked it up ahead of time.
I looked it up right before we got on. We started this to cover the new DC Universe under James Gunn, and now here we are a year and a half later-ish. Finally getting into it with Creature Commandos.
It's daddy time, they say.
Exactly as we planned.
It's weird when you click into Max, it says it's daddy time, and then it takes you to the episode.
It makes a lot of sense to me.
The mind doesn't do that.
You gotta reset it. You gotta hit it on the side, reset it, and it'll start up again. You gotta hit that daddy on the side. That's what we always say here on the podcast. Anyway, why don't we get into it and talk about Creature Commandos episode one and episode two? They're both up on Max right now. The Collywobbles and the Tourmaline Necklace. As we were hinting at here, this officially starts off the DCU, the brand new, totally clean, fresh start. Superhero cinematic universe that has taken over from the previous DCEU. And you don't need to know anything that comes into this. You just need to have watched The Suicide Squad by James Gunn and all of Peacemaker season one, and maybe a couple of other things, as well as having a passing familiarity.
Also, with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, maybe.
You know? Absolutely. If you read that a couple of times, watch the Universal monster movies as well. But otherwise,
read the comics.
Totally clean.
Comics help, too. Super easy.
Probably read a bunch of the comics.
Gotta know how to
definitely go back to Weird War Tales, which is where Creature Commandos came from. You gotta read all of that as well. Frankenstein, Agent of Shade.
Maybe check out Howling Commandos while you're at it. Just for fun.
Yeah, that's Marvel, but so you can compare and contrast.
Yeah, exactly.
But otherwise, totally
Greek
clean.
Mythology. Seriously,
check it out.
Probably need to know what phosphorus is as well. That would
And doctors, Wikipedia doctors.
And weasels. Look up weasels. The Google AI summary. Research. Normally I tell people not to read that, but Google AI summary for weasels, very good. Really in-depth.
Think of nightmares, I'm sure.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm being semi-facetious here because really you can mostly jump into this, but it is giving you a surprising amount of continuity anyway, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Brief bit of recap here and spoiler warning right at the top. After the events of The Suicide Squad, not Suicide Squad, but The Suicide Squad.
One difference. And Peacemaker, weird difference.
Yes. At Peacemaker Season 1, Amanda Waller can no longer use humans to do her dirty work. So when Cersei, which I have discovered is how you pronounce the character's name, surprisingly, different than I did it in,
Cersei.
I thought it was Cersei, but it's Cersei, according to the show. She has a group called the Sons of Themyscira, who just want to get back to the woman-only island, which is mythical in this new DCU. And they're doing that by going through Pakolistan, a European nation ruled by Princess Alana, or at least someday it will be ruled by Princess Alana. So Amanda Waller sends in her Creature Commandos Task Force M, since she can't use humans, she can use monsters, sends them there to protect the princess. And over the course of the first two episodes, we get a little attacking from Cersei. We get some origin story about the bride,
flashbacks,
who is the bride of Frankenstein, one of the members of the team. And both the bride and Nina Mazursky, who's basically a Shape of Water but fish woman, are in big trouble by the end of the first episode after being attacked by Cersei. Maybe they're dead. I don't know. I guess we'll find out what happens. And there's a lot of other stuff going on. We meet Rick Flagg Sr., who is the father of Rick Flagg Jr., who was killed by Peacemaker in the Suicide Squad. Also, Dr. Phosphorus, this is a new character, who is a radioactive man. Weasel, who also seemed to die at the beginning of the Suicide Squad, but was alive. He's a child murderer, so everybody loves him. And yeah, there you go. A bunch of other things going on, but why don't we start with the broad strokes here, since this is the first two episodes. This is the start of a asterisk right there, brand new superhero universe. What'd you guys think about that? That was obviously a lot of intro on my part, but Justin, you seem champing at the bit here.
Yeah, I'm champing at the bit. We speculated, or we were sort of like, huh, interesting, starting with Creature Commandos, an animated show. Weird start to a sweeping cinematic universe. But I got to say, this felt really nice. It was a great bridge into the James Gunn era. James Gunn is on Front Street with this, so much so that he's animated himself into the title sequence.
Yeah, I don't know that he did the animation. You think he drew himself? Yep.
Okay. I mean, he has enough of a hand and everything. Yeah, it's a good pick. And honestly, like, we see him in the opening credits, and Rick Flagg looks basically just like him.
Rick Flagg Jr. has the same haircut. You know what I mean? Is that senior? Yeah.
I'm saying, I want to be clear. This is Rick Flagg Sr. Rick Flagg Jr. is dead.
Dead. Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just saying that it feels like James Gunn, this is a very much pouring himself into the project. It feels very much like what James Gunn has done before, which is, you know, almost unilaterally been successful. So that's exciting. And the animation is cool. I will say two quick things and then turn it over to Pete.
No, Jesus Christ. Just dropping two grenades. And let me react to the first grenade before you drop the second grenade.
That's not how grenades work. Grenades come fast and furious.
Well, this is a podcast. Can we handle one thing at a time before you're stacking on me?
You're dropping two bombs.
Come on.
You're blown up. You're hot on the mic, battleship.
I'm sorry. There's so much to jump into here, and you're killing me.
Yeah, don't jump into grenades, first of all. But Justin, lob your final two grenades.
These are just my quick final.
They're hot takes, is what they are. They're flaming hot takes.
I actually have not heard anything that was that hot of a take, so I'm very curious to hear from you, Pete. But Justin, finish it up.
Yep. The two things I was going to say is this is a great, if you like Invincible, and you like the Suicide Squad movies, this is it. It's a perfect middle point between those. Very smart choice. Second, Sean Gunn as G.I. Robot. As G.I. Robot and Weasel. Dad, where's the nepotism? I'm ready to be a Nepo, baby. I'm Justin Gunn. Give me one of these roles. Let's go. Come on. Listen to this voice. All it's right, gold. Right. It's butter.
All right. First off, hard disagree. The animation is not – it has a little bit of that kind of like – robotic, like not handmade kind of feel. And secondly, starting with an animation, I think is smart because when you think of DC, you think of Batman the Animated Series. Am I right or wrong?
I don't.
You know, and that's really the kind of core, I feel like, of what's great about DC is a lot of the animated stuff that they've done has been amazing. I think like that's the most bulletproof stuff that they've put out is the animated stuff. They've taken some weird swings, but
I think it's been successful.
Smart move, like going with the core of it, like let's do an animated first to kind of really pay homage to what makes DC great. And I think that's a smart move. And you know, you kind of said it dismissive in the beginning, but I think it's a really great thing to do.
I think it is going to work out well because this is good. But to me, if I'm James Gunn and I'm about to make a huge statement and put a flag in something, it would make sense to launch with like a major movie.
A Rick Flag? Put a Rick Flag in something?
Put a Rick Flag in it.
I just put a Rick Flag in several things.
Interesting episode.
Am I the only one who feels that way about the animation? If it looks too computer made, it's not as enjoyable for me.
So you don't like the animation?
What do you think is computer made specifically? Because I didn't get that at all.
Okay, so there are shots where they're driving in the cars and they look very blocky. They're kind of like the tanks rolling through the city. You know, when they
I'm starting to get the feeling you don't know a lot about war, because first you're like, you think there's a timeout in the middle of grenades, and second, tanks are blocky. That's what they look like.
Yeah, I know, but they look very like that. There's this one shot that looks just very kind of like,
So, just to be clear, Pete, you hate computers?
First off, I'm very happy with our computer overlords.
I don't
get excited about something that somebody put in the computer and that spat it out. And they're like, this is animation. I was like, great work. I would rather have artists.
I got bad news for all of TV and movies.
Well, I'm just saying you could make it look a little bit, you know, more artistic and less, you know, like machine made.
I thought the animation was just fine. It didn't strike me particularly either way. I thought it was perfectly good. I do find bad animation very distracting, and I don't think that's what we got here at all.
Agreed.
I thought it was fine.
Well, let me say the style. I think the style is like Invincible, the TV show, and I think that is cool. I think that's what animation is. That's type is popular right now. I will say though, I think this is really well directed. If you don't like the drawing style, that's fine. But this show's particularly is directed like a live action.
It's very well directed,
and so that I think is really
amazingly cast. I think it's a blast. I love it. But you know, you were just coming in hot, and I was just like, dude, slow down. I got to talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, nice. I'm sort of two minds before we're even really getting into the episodes here, but I'm sort of two minds of the whole like, yeah, we're going to use some of the DCEU continuity, but not all of it. I wish there was a clean slate, like unless we were just picking up here with like big, bold, like you're saying, flag in the sand, big statement. And I think that's what we're going to get with Superman once they get to that next summer for sure. But on the other hand, I do think there is something very funny about the fact that like this is starting off a new brand new superhero universe in the most DC way possible, which is like great news. We've rebooted everything except several people remember the previous universe.
Yeah. And honestly, like it's good. I like it. I think using Amanda Waller here and having it pick up on what has come before serves the fans. Like, and they're not doing it in a way where it's like, wink, wink, you got to know this. They are rattling off Argus, all this other Suicide Squad stuff. And I'm like, I barely know that. And I've dedicated a huge portion of my brain to this shit. So like an outside viewer is just like, okay, it just sounds like government organizations. Like they're using the continuity in a non-necessary way, but in a more functional way in the present project. And that feels great for me.
Here's my slightly bigger issue that I will throw out about the show. And this is just for the first two episodes. So we'll see obviously how it goes. But so far it feels like the Suicide Squad, but with monsters, which is fine. Yeah. Like saying that sentence out loud, I'm like, yeah, I like that. And so that's good. Like this is not a,
that's called the pitch. That's called the pitch for this.
But doing essentially the same setup here, I want to see it veer off in some way. I want to see it become its own thing. Like, that's fine to start
with. I think it's heading there. I mean, we're getting this kind of crazy, quote-unquote, not love story thing happening here that's very interesting.
Well, I think the strongest theme that is coming out from these first two episodes is it seems like James Gunn is dealing with toxic masculinity, like pretty much on the surface. You've got this group called the Sons of Themyscira, like we mentioned, all they want to do is central. Like, there's a woman-only island. We need to be on that woman-only island. Let us on there. Like, this is very clearly MAGA, January 6th, rioter, man, incel type thing coming out there. And then in the second episode, we get a take on Frankenstein, who's doing the same sort of thing. He needs to possess the bride. He needs to own the bride. And when he ultimately can't, he gets very frustrated. And spoilers here, because we are getting into spoilers, but ends up killing Victor Frankenstein when he sees him having sex with the bride. Which questions about that we can get to later, I guess. But
you just jumped into the second episode.
I did, but my point here is that it is very clear the themes he's dealing with, at least up front. We've got, on the other hand, we've got like Rick Flag, a nice guy who's being seduced by a very sexually aggressive princess. So we'll see how that pans out in terms of the theme. But if that's what he's dealing with over the course of seven episodes, I think that's great. Like, that is not what they dealt with in the Suicide Squad. That does give it a very different flavor. It makes it very present and very pointed. And I'm curious to see how much he follows that.
Agree. Yeah. I'm enjoying that stuff.
Yeah, before we start getting, I mean, we got back up the truck here a little bit and deal with the DC flip. I mean, they're really making moves. You know what I mean? That was fun to watch, you know?
Well, Pete, that actually premiered on the Christopher Reeve story movie. So this is the second.
Yeah, it hasn't been released on HBO Max. Yeah, I'm still waiting.
Yeah, that
is
on Max. That's on Max.
Yeah, I know. I'm you know, I'm looking forward to watching that.
Right. So it is on Max. You just haven't watched it.
No, it just, my
it
thing
it just
says,
came out.
It's coming out either later today or tomorrow because I checked this morning because I've been checking every day. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you could have seen it in theaters. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Well, you mean the one day it was released in theaters?
No, no, they wide released it as well.
Oh, okay.
I'm getting the feeling here, and I don't want to be too aggressive about this. You guys aren't intimately familiar with the release schedule of Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how much that feeds into the Creature Commandos particularly, but you certainly are making it the central
flip
point.
Was fun. It even flips over. It's such a flip. You know what I mean? So
no, it's great. I think it's beautiful cool. tribute to the history of DC because you got the Fleischer cartoon Superman breaking out of chains. That's what they're trying to do here. Like, DC Studios has been under these chains for so many years. We're breaking out of them. Great. Yeah. It's Superman energy as well. And flip it to the DC Bullet, which is another classic symbol I thought was very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was already on a movie. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, we could have just said that and already been moving on, but you had to be a dick about it. So Sir Douche-a-Lot over
here. That's the concept of the podcast, man. And by the way, to be clear about the toxic masculinity thing, I see myself on that. I'm on the side of the Sons of Themyscira.
Yeah, I notice you're wearing a lot of the
Sons. Well, we're
going
into it. What did you guys think about the Jake Tapper cameo in the first episode? That was
fun.
Cool.
Great stuff.
The new show is a funny way to start.
Mm-hmm. Tapping the Tapper. I wonder what his part is going to be in the larger DCU. Is he sort of, he's going to be representing the New York One news team.
He's the Pat Kiernan of the DCU.
Yeah, don't you take jobs away from Pat Kiernan. Come on, dude.
Pat Kiernan is Marvel.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, literally, I think that's the joke that Marvel's done, and they're going a different way. And I will say, it is Pat Kiernan, but I think they've touched on a couple other New York One hosts that I'm like, mm-hmm. guys, what continuity? How deep are we going with the New York One news?
They have the guy, I forget his name, but he always does the New Year's Eve show because I'm sure he's the only one who's like, I don't have anything else to do. That he has this very weird delivery.
How dare
it's
you.
Very fun. Really,
another New Year's Eve watching New York One. It's beautiful.
I know how to have fun. I'm very excited. It's coming up.
I'm having
and then
fun.
We do
on
get
New York
into
one.
Task Force M. Why don't we briefly talk about the cast and what we think about the characters?
Oh,
any early faves here?
I mean, I just want to say real quick again on the outside of the show take. Mm. At first, we were like, "Oh, it's weird. He's casting all of these voices with live action actors for the eventual perhaps." Development of this into a live action project. And I feel like all of us, or at least me, were very dubious of that. But I got to say, as soon as I started hearing them and saw the intro, I was like, oh, I want to see that now.
This is awesome. Right. Yeah.
I want to see the live action version of this.
Yeah.
Because it is really fun. And I do think the voice acting's great. The character games, we have sort of the more emotionally narrative driven characters like Bride. Rick Flag, I think, is going to be a major part of the main story. And then we have our more comedy forward guys like Weasel, Doc Phosphorus, G.I. Robot, which are fun. It's great to hear Alan Tudyk doing it. Weasel's licking his crotch just the right amount, right, Pete?
I could have maybe done without the pee joke. You know what I mean? That's the thing about Weasel is it gets old fast, at least for me. Whereas the what's up never gets old. I mean,
what do you think about the child killing? Are you into that? Like, is that something you're on board with?
No, definitely not. Thank you for checking, though, you fucking Sir Douche-a-Lot.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for knighting me, by the way.
Yeah, that's the queen
herself. I
really
like these characters as well. I agree with your take. I think, you know, Alan Tudyk is always very funny in everything. So his dry delivery as Doc Phosphorus is great.
I loved his line. He's like, yes, I'm smiling, but you can't tell that. It's just so funny.
Yeah, it's perfect
sarcastic
casting
smile.
It's so also funny. Early going, but I like David Harbour as Frankenstein. I think that's fun casting as well.
Oh,
also,
my God.
I think it was Peter Serafinowicz as... Dr. Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein, which is, he was the guy who, I mean, he's done a ton of things, but he was what a bunch of a-holes from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
So it's fun to see like those bit players from James Gunn things popping up here. That was neat. Anya Charlotra, who is from The Witcher as Cersei. Good casting as well.
Great casting. Get
a lot of from her. And then one other thing that I thought was a little fun, just before I forget here, but the music throughout seems very specifically James Gunn. There's a band called Gogol Bordello.
Gogol Bordello, very fun band.
Yeah,
I've seen them.
They make a cameo towards the end.
Yeah, they're in the montage. It's funny. Yeah,
cute, cute stuff.
They are awesome. They are a party, and their music they provide in that scene is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's all good stuff. I like this cast. I think it's fun. It's going to be fun to follow them, whether they've made an impression yet or not.
Yeah.
I think they have. I really liked the way that they were all introduced with an Around the Horn sort of dossier intro. Yep, and then we get this on the back end, sort of the other side of the parenthesis, is the late night character montage we got at the end of the first episode, which I also thought was awesome. Like, we're setting up some really – everything just feels like it has – it's a steady hand is guiding the ship here, which is very exciting.
On the animation style, or maybe on the direction while we're talking through the first episode, the fight between Doc Phosphorus and Rick Flag as Doc Phosphorus tries to get the device that I guess doesn't blow up their heads but does electrocute all of them that Amanda Waller gave them, I thought was great. Really well staged, very well done. I think that's probably the closest to the Invincible parallel that you were putting there, Justin, because it's bloody, it's rough, it doesn't hold back. And it's fun seeing Rick Flag, a dude who's just a regular dude in his boxer shorts, fighting back against radioactive man who can melt things with his hands. Fun stuff.
Yeah, the part we put on the oven glove was hilarious to fight him. Yeah, I agree. I love the fight sequences. And then later in the second episode, the bride goes on a sick fight sequence. Yeah, that was awesome. I'm very happy with the fight sequences and the depiction of that kind of stuff in this in these episodes. It's enthralling.
I got to say, at the end of the first episode, I was surprised that this is a one narrative season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most animated shows go the opposite. Even adult animated shows, I feel like. The fact that this is going with a pretty hard connective narrative, like the jump between episode one and two is, there are cold opens here, and I think that'll continue, but it directly links up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was surprising. And I watched the sort of in the coming weeks on Creature Commandos, and the story only deepens. But pleasantly surprised, I would say.
Go ahead, Pete.
Well, I wanted to get into the emotional roller coaster that is the kind of bride's story, but that's the second episode. So if you wanted to say something before that.
No. I was going to get into a topic you definitely don't want to talk about. Let's talk about the second episode, which is, I like to call it Poor Things. Because that's
what's funny is we have the first episode and it's for me, at least, who's always pushing for a rom-com. It was an upswing where I was like, oh my God, these two are going to get back together. Oh my God, this is going to be great. Like, oh, so fun. And then you find out the history and it's, you know, you're kind of really thrown by it. At least I was. I was like, oh God, this is awful. And it's one of those things where it's like, I think they do an interesting job of telling the story of somebody who's kind of like obsessed or in love or whatever. And it's like there is some good parts to it and then some horrible parts. And it was an interesting kind of back and forth the more we learned as the episode went on.
I mean, I hear your comparison, Alex, but I do think this was a more specific target that they were trying to hit, like changing the narrative, making this tragic story and giving the bride and by extension Frankenstein a really monster. Interesting the monster, a really interesting situation to be in that I think is nice and rich for more story. I do think, like, coming out of the cold open, I was thinking like, oh, this show is doing something that I think a lot of comic book and shows in this world try to do, have some backstory, but maintain presence in the main story. And this show's doing a really good job with it. Like, the backstory is good and adds so much, like, interest and heart and tragedy, especially with the bride. But it still is all about the present tense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it does a great job of, like, giving us information to give scenes more weight, but not kind of like overdoing it or underdoing it. I think it's an interesting balance, especially when, you know, they get to that table and she kind of has a flashback of what that table's kind of been through.
What has that table been through, Pete?
Well, that's where she was born, first off.
What else happened there? Anything else?
And let me say, to go into that, like, we get, like, first off, I was watching this in a coffee shop at 8:30 this morning. Controversial choice.
Wow, were people like, look at this perv.
I was like, oh, okay. And then I kept shrinking the window. So I was like, well, if someone's going to really have to commit to watching this over my shoulder, as opposed to me just showing it to everybody. And of course, I had my laptop hooked up to the sound system of the coffee shop so that everyone could hear.
Right. Yeah, and your pants were down, as they always are at a coffee shop. Right?
It's a pants down, pants optional coffee shop.
I live in Brooklyn. Yeah, come on.
But more seriously, the way that this episode, I thought, was dealing with, like, we get sex in two very different contexts. Yeah. And I thought it was, you know, we have the Rick Flag thing that is this princess who is, like, going after Rick Flag, and they have sex. And you're like, oh, this is, like, it's played as a bit of a joke with the other characters outside being,
like,
talking about. Oh, my
God, yeah, it was like, hold on a second.
Yeah, and that's fun and funny, and this feels like very, like, you know, Animal House, like, sexual romp thing. And then on the back end, we get the bride's story and the much more tragic like sex and the romance that is ended by Frankenstein just being absolutely selfish and a murderer. And it's also told in as a surprise in the middle, intercut with her getting beat up. Mm-hmm. And man, the fact that these are both, the juxtaposition of those, I thought was really interesting. And the way the fight and the sex with between Bride and the Dr. Frankenstein, I thought was just such a surprise and was super effective in the trauma of it, of both sides of what was happening. I loved it.
Yeah, I agree. And James Gunn had talked a little bit, which irked me slightly at the New York Comic Con panel, where it's like, this isn't like the Harley Quinn show or anything. We have real sex. And I was like, okay, buddy, calm down. I like the Harley Quinn show, and they do have real sex in the show. But I guess what he was talking about was uncensored sex, which is what I was not expecting. Like, they always have it blurred.
Also, it was kind of creepy because it was like she's learning words, you know? So it's like she's just – you know, coming into
it
and then immediately
to the thing,
sex,
which they don't
like,
deal.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, they don't deal with that at all in the show. And a lot of people brought that up, in particular with Poor Things, that it was like, you're having sex with a baby, basically. Don't do that. And that was the thing that I was talking about earlier that I kind of wanted to maybe get into a little bit, is that whole idea there, which I don't know. It was, they don't have time in a 20 to 25 minute show, but I feel like just doing that misses a little bit.
Well, I would argue that this episode is not trying to point at that. I think the way that it is time dashed and the sort of the way the montage is spun out, I think it's meant that they do have a lot of time together. That mm-hmm. She isn't sort of like a freshly born adult in an adult body. Like, there's a romance that develops in between the doc.
So, what do you think? It would be 18 years? You know what I mean? For her to be legal and then it to be okay? Or, like, what do you think?
Well, I don't know what to say legal is strained with a reanimated corpse.
That's another thing. Is it necrophilia? Is my other question there.
Yeah. Like, what's to be? Because there's either one or the other. You know what I mean? Like, it's either.
Either one or the other what?
It's still dead and you're fucking something that's dead and that's necrophilia. Or it's a minor, and you know what I mean? So, like,
I think
real
the show
lose,
isn't
prospect
trying,
there.
Yes, I think that. I mean, you can think about that, and please continue to.
No,
but I think the show is trying to point to a monster romance and the tragedy that spins out of it. And it's meant.
You think
to,
they're
going to
pull it out? I mean, this is a tough start if it's going to lead to romance.
It's not between Frankenstein and Bride. I don't think
so. Monster and Bride. Yes.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think she hates him. She doesn't want anything to do with him. He's an obsessed stalker is essentially what's going on here. And that montage towards the end of the episode is great as they fight throughout the decades. We get to see them in all these delightful costumes. Yeah. And she just keeps pushing back at him over and over and over again. It's going to be very interesting to see when they inevitably come together at some point in the present, because I assume that'll happen.
Because in the opening credits, it's like they're on the team together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's like, how are they going to get to at least a working relationship?
A lot of people do, man. A lot of people do. A couple of quick things to call out before I forget, just moments. Loved when the bride goes to the castle with Nina in the first episode. There's the old lady across the street.
Poor Nina.
She's got Zac Efron on her phone from the 2014 MTV Movie Awards. I'm sure we all equally clocked that.
Yeah, 100%. Good call on that. I have that in my notes.
That was for that movie that I had completely forgotten it existed, that I'm also forgetting the name of, the one that he did with Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan, if you remember.
Yeah.
What's the word for an Easter egg that no one cares about? Is that what do you think that would be?
I think that's
just
an
awkward moment. That's what it's called.
Oh, is it that? Oh my God! Wow. Yeah. Good recall.
Wow. Yo, what are you guys simpatico all of a sudden?
No, I'm just saying it's a rom com. I've seen it.
Yeah,
don't
for
think
sure.
I didn't see it. He waited
it out
in the
poster,
comfort.
And that's it. It's just the three of them sitting together on the poster. I remember that. Why do I remember this?
What is this, a race to the bottom, guys? How much more do you want to say about this?
Liked cutting in on Frankenstein on a party boat. That was fun. And then there was one other thing that I was going to call out.
Key Grip could have been Chris Salmon.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Good. Great. Yeah, you guys should have said that name at the same time.
Anything else you guys want to call out?
I loved the bit about America pop culture. The what's up was hilarious. The where's the beef?
I feel like you've mentioned that 9 times.
Well, it's funny, and it didn't get old.
It's close to your heart. Yeah.
It didn't get old. And every time you got Dr. Phosphorus, I'm having a good time. He is just... It's a perfect writing towards that humor. I feel like, he cast that as he was writing. It almost seemed perfectly kind of sculpted for him. But, seeing the bride kick ass and then also be efficient with the gun was pretty cool. And, I hope we get more of that because that's fun. But poor Nina and her last words there, that was just such a hilarious, fun ending, I thought, for the second episode.
What do you think about, this is going back to the beginning, but also the overall plot, what do you think about the Themyscira mentioned? Because I was surprised about that popping up right at the beginning of the episode. And this is, this is like uber outside story, but obviously we know there's a Superman movie coming. They've cast David Corn Sweat as Superman. Batman, we know they're working on for Brave and the Bold, but Wonder Woman has been this big question mark. So I was a little stunned when they pulled out Themyscira right at the beginning and be like, okay, wait, are we getting a stealth Wonder Woman? Are they surprise casting? What do you guys think?
I think the answer is no. I think it will be more of a red herring for this series that, I think part of, especially in the opening montage, it's meant to make the sons of Themyscira seem stupid. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we'll ever actually get there. And I bet Cersei's motivation will not at all be pointed at Themyscira.
Interesting.
I think it's still Gal. I think, maybe
that's delusional. I'm so sorry.
Well,
yeah.
Hey man, I've seen all the Wonder Womans in the theater. You know what I mean?
All of them?
Wow!
How did you manage that? That's crazy. Yeah, well,
Pete, will you stop flexing on us? Come on, bro.
No, man. I'm. If you say Wonder Woman, I'm showing up to the theater.
You saw that awkward moment and Wonder Woman in theaters?
Well, I didn't see awkward moment in theaters. I saw that streaming.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And Wonder Woman 1984, you also saw in theaters?
Yes, wow, both I did. Of them.
That's crazy.
That was in the middle of heavy COVID. I don't know what, how you yeah. went there.
Hey, I risked my life for it, man.
You went to the movie theater and watched it on your laptop?
No answer. Correct. Any other notes for the episode before we start to wrap up here? No?
All covered. I think just a great start. I'm excited to finish the rest of the season here. This was great.
Yeah, I love the pacing of it. It really moves. I feel like this is a great idea, really well executed. I'm having a blast with this.
And it's great writing, something that James Gunn has claimed yes. that he's putting at the forefront, and this feels like, yes, maybe he is. It helps that he is the one that was writing this.
Yes, I think that does help quite a bit that he was able to, approve that. Well, there yeah. you go. Creature Commandos, we did it. We made it all the way to the beginning of the DCU. We'll continue to recap and cover this over the next 5 weeks. Since there's
years.
The DCU going forward for the rest of our lives.
Okay, yes.
Of course. But for the next 5 weeks, because there's five more episodes of Creature Commandos, if you would like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about the DCU. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Club on Blue Sky, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, Instagram, and Threads, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, Dad, come on. Justin deserves one voice. Just like
one speaking role. And these guys want to launch their That Awkward Bromant podcast where they talk about the movie. And we've got a great cold open for it already. So let's get them going.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.